This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Okay, so I'm here for the Jodcast with Dr. Miguel Santander García from the Isaac Newton Group in La Palma. Hello.
Hi.
And we're going to talk to you a little bit about your research. So can you tell us first what kind of research you work in?
I'm mainly working on planetary nebulae.
Okay, so what's a planetary nebula?
Well, to answer that, first of all, we have to clarify something, just in case anyone is wondering. A planetary nebula has absolutely nothing to do with planets.
Okay.
The name comes from the fact that when Herschel first observed these objects back in the 18th century, they appeared like round, fuzzy nebula, resembling planets. So. He called them planetary nebula, but nowadays we know that they have nothing to do with planets at all, but the name still has some inertia and we still use it. Now, a planetary nebula is the latest stage of life of a low mass or intermediate mass star, up to 8 times the mass of the Sun.
Okay.
Beyond that, the stars explode as supernovae, but low and intermediate mass stars end their lives by slowly ejecting their envelopes until the only thing that remains at their cores is a hot, inert white dwarf.
So what do you mean by envelope?
By envelope I mean the external shells of the star. A star has a core and an envelope, which might vary in depth.
So what's the difference between the core and the envelope? What separates the core of a star from the envelope?
Well, a star is basically a factory in which elements are combined, nuclear fusion, into heavier elements. And then the heavier elements are denser, weight more, and they then slowly go inwards to the heavier core of the star.
Okay, so the core is made up of heavier elements, while the outer envelope
is made
up of lighter elements.
Like hydrogen mainly, some helium.
Okay.
And then at the end of its life, the star slowly blows off that envelope, mainly hydrogen and helium and some lighter elements. And then when all we have at the core is the heaviest elements, the temperature on the surface of the of that core, which we call white dwarf, is enough to light up, to ionize the whole envelope, so we can see it in the sky.
And that's a planetary nebula.
And that's a planetary nebula.
What do you work on inside planetary nebulae? What's the main problem or the main question that you're trying to answer?
Well, the main question in planetary nebula is that when we look at planetary nebula, and we know like 3,000 planetary nebulae in our galaxy, many of them are round, but also many of them have different shapes. Some of them are ellipsoidal, and some of them show large degree of collimation in the outflows, which are expanding into space, and some of them are very extremely bipolar, like some butterfly-like. And the main question is to know, to understand how a star, which is mainly a sphere of material, it's mainly round or almost round, when it blows off its envelope, it ends up with a completely different shape than a round nebula. Now, some hypotheses for that involve magnetic fields of the star guiding the material as it flows out. Another very good hypothesis that is currently being researched is that instead of one star at the core, we have two stars. We have a binary system, a closed binary system, which is interacting, so the material tends to be ejected preferentially along the polar axis of the orbit, of the orbital plane of the binary system.
So if the binary orbits in a plane, like on a piece of paper. The mm-hmm. two stars are both on a piece of paper. The nebula expands away from the piece of paper, perpendicular to the piece of paper, at mm-hmm. 90 degrees to the piece of paper. So why, if you have a binary system, why would that mean that the matter is able to move away from the plane of the binary, but not in the plane of the binary? What causes that?
Well, if the system, the binary system, is a closed binary, then both stars are interacting. And that means, basically, that one of the stars is donating material to the other star, which gets onto its surface or into some disk around it. But if the stars are very close, it might happen that the star which is receiving the material has not enough time to process it. So it's getting material from the other star too quickly, so then it cannot process it, and then the material starts to accumulate, and we end up with both stars inside an envelope of gas. And then if we add the interactions that we have because of the stars going into an orbit, then we'll end up with some sort of belt, of donut, around the orbit. And then later on, when the material for the nebula is ejected, it will have no problem to move out of the orbital plane where the donut is, and it will have some problems going into the denser donut that it's around the belt.
Sure. So it's basically as though it was an expanding sphere, like we would expect, but this donut acts like a waist around this expanding sphere and allows it to move much freer in the polar directions, away from perpendicular to the plane of the binary, but slows it down and traps it in the plane of the binary.
That's it.
So now we have this hypothesis to test. Mm-hmm. Okay. How can you test this binary hypothesis?
Next step is finding the binaries, because right now we haven't found many of them. In fact, we only know just that a bunch of systems are in fact binaries, because these objects, planetary nebula and their central stars, are so far away that we can't tell one star. If there are two stars there, close binary, we can't spatially solve the system, so we can't tell one star apart from the other. So we need to invent and develop techniques to observe the core and tell that there are in fact two stars there. What we are doing is to find new binaries to test this hypothesis, to see if most, what we think is that most bipolar nebulae come from a binary, from a closed binary system. Mm-hmm. So now we are trying to find new binaries by one technique, which is called photometric monitoring.
So what does photometric monitoring mean?
It means that as the stars go in their orbits, if there's a binary system, if there's a single star, then the brightness will be more or less the same every time. So we will not notice any variation in brightness. But if there are two stars, and imagine the orbital plane is in the line of sight, then one star might eclipse the other as they go round. And then in that moment, we will see a variation in brightness.
Because one star is blocking the light.
Yes, because one star is brighter than the other. So when the brighter star goes before the dimmer star, then we will see some decrease in brightness.
Okay, so to do that, you have to take lots of images of a star, and then check how bright the star is on each image.
If we see some variation, time variation of the brightness, that might tell us that the system is binary. It's not necessary that the orbital plane is in the line of sight, but it could also be some tilting. So the variations can be due to the reflection of the light of one star onto the surface of the other star. We can also tell the difference.
So, as well as finding new binaries at the centre of planetary nebulae, what else can be done and is being done to investigate the effect of a binary star on the formation of a planetary nebula?
That's important, because it's not only a matter of finding binary stars inside planetary nebulae, because what we want to test is that the binary system is the responsible for the shaping, for the bipolar shaping of this nebulae. So it could be just that it's purely coincidental that the star is a binary star, in fact. But according to the theory, the binary star ejects the nebula preferentially away from the orbital plane. So the waist of the nebula should be in the same plane, the equator of the nebula should be in the same plane as the orbital plane.
Okay.
Then, when we find a binary through this photometric monitoring, then there are another number of methods, instrumental methods, to derive the parameters of its orbit. And that means that we can know the inclination of the orbital plane, among other things. And then if we know the inclination, means that we can know how that orbit is oriented in the plane of the sky. By looking at the nebula, looking at the image of an image of the nebula and combining it with spectra of the nebula, we can also develop a three-dimensional model of the structure and velocity pattern of the nebula, which tell us about the age and other parameters, velocities and such, as well as the orientation of the nebula in the plane of the sky. So what we are testing is, when we find a new binary, we develop a model for that nebula and we test if the orientation of the nebula is the same as the orientation of the orbital plane. If they are the same, they are similar, then that tells us that the binary system is probably responsible for the shaping of the nebula.
So how close do the binary stars at the center of the nebula need to be to have an effect?
Well, we're not completely sure about how far away they can be, how close there are binaries whose orbit has a period of just a couple of hours. So every 2 hours there's one orbit, and that might probably be it more than enough to shape the nebula. But on the other hand, there are systems of stars which are much further away, which periods of several hundred years, which are still interacting. They are called symbiotic binaries, and which also produce nebulae which are very similar to the planetary nebulae. And we think that binary interaction might probably play a role in the shaping of this nebula. So we are not completely sure of what's the range needed, the distance range or the period range needed for a nebula to be shaped. We are now starting to find new binaries, so maybe it's a little bit early for being sure about that.
You also mentioned that there are very few known binaries. Just to get an idea, as you said earlier, there are about 3,000 known planetary nebulae in the galaxy. How many of those, vaguely, do we know that contain a binary star?
Well, no more than a few tens of systems.
So that's a very, very small fraction.
It might look disappointing, but in fact it's hard to find them out. But well, recently we were involved in a campaign, observational campaign, the Mercator telescope here in La Palma, to find the new binaries in planetary nebulae, and we were quite successful. Out of 20 objects, we clearly, without any doubt, found out that at least 10 are binary, close binary stars.
and close binaries means very close binaries.
Yes, because you said really close binaries.
Binaries with periods of hundreds of years, which would be completely undetectable
to us,
can have an effect. So the binaries that you detected at the Mercator were very close binaries.
In fact, one of the problems for us not detecting more binaries might be that their instrumentation only allows us to detect close binaries, because the further away they are, the slower their changes in brightness and their changes in velocity around the orbits are, so the more difficult to detect. So what we are finding, when I mean close binaries, I mean periods from a couple of hours to one to few days. Yes. More than that, it's very, very difficult to find.
Okay, so thank you very much, Miguel, and the best of luck with your work here at the ING.
Thank you.